Secretary staff, and then if the Department of Small Business is accompanying CEDA, introduce themselves, as well as CEDA.
My name is Kenny Mwima, member of the committee from the province of Northern Cape. Thank you.
My name is Muhammad Dango, member of the committee from the province of Gauteng.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Natalie Bisoki, Lydia Kim Radua, I'm sure she is a province in your first time to tell you.
Aushe, my name is Brenda Matebul, I'm from the Pompo province.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you. My name is Tim Bradisic from KZN. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, and everybody else. Sonia Basaf in Mpumalanga.
Good morning. Jacques Lontier from the Western Cape.
Good morning. My name is Maria Solomons, Committee Secretary to this committee.
Morning, everyone. My name is Luto Masishuk, and I'm an advisor of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Nasipo Kongwane, I'm from CEDA.
Good morning, I'm Norman Zizi from CEDA.
Can you just tell us your portfolios, please?
Thank you, Chair. I'm the executive manager for the CEDA technology program.
My name is Zizi, CFO, CEDA.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members and Colleagues. My name is Mzokolo Maki. I'm the Acting DDG for Enterprise Development at the Department of Small Business Development.
Good morning. My name is Belen Mushe. I'm the Researcher for the Select Committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Enrico Vizier and I'm the Committee Assistant to this committee.
Good morning, I'm Victoria Tassi and I'm with the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Two ladies that just come in, introduce themselves.
Good morning, my name is Manisa Chikwatamba.
Good morning, my name is Mandisa Chikwatamba, the Chief Executive of CEDA for CEDA.
Good morning, my name is Joreen Glovo. I'm the Acting Chairperson for CEDA.
I was worried when the CEDA was introducing themselves that there's no chairperson, there's no CEO, and we're going to chase the delegation out. So you're Acting Chairperson?
I'm the Acting Chairperson.
Oh. So the documents that we have here, there's Mr. Sukoni as a chairperson, so he's no longer the chairperson?
No, he's no longer the chairperson.
Oh, okay. All right. Honorable
Chair, I'm sure you're painfully aware, but I don't see any political leadership here today. And I don't know what we're going to do in terms of our committee resolution regarding that.
Now, let me explain the procedure that we agreed on, that when it comes to entities, the chairperson of the board and the COO should be present, as well as the person responsible for entities in a department. So we've got the acting chairperson, we've got the CEO, we've got the person who's responsible for the entities in the department. But then we said when it comes to annual performance plans of the department and annual report, we expect then the ministry to be present, as well as the director general. So not it's limited to the department, not its entities. So that is an arrangement that you agreed on. But when the minister feels like attending, the ministry can attend, but there's no obligation when it comes to the entities. We limited it to the department itself. Now, even in the department itself, on the APP and the annual report.
Sorry, I may have missed an introduction, but I did anybody indicate that they were from DTR?
No, it's a small business development. It's an entity of small business. Yes, the gentleman in the corner is from the small business development.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We going to, as we agreed a long time ago, that we first start with our internal matters. I request members that we deal first with the minutes of the last meeting. And there's a long outstanding report that we have not yet adopted of the oversight visit to the sheltered employment enterprise. If we can adopt that as well. And then after that, then we'll get the briefing from the CEDA with the chairperson of the CEDA making the opening remarks and also the report. She can then delegate if the report will be tabled by the CEO, but will allow you to decide on your own what is going to be the direction. Can we then go to the minutes, honorable members?
Have you read the minutes? Can we move for the adoption?
No, for the benefit of those who did not, can we go page by page? On page one, any correction or omission? Page two. Page three. Page four. Page five. Page six. And the last page, page seven. I take it that you were moving for the adoption of minutes, Honorable Dango, and seconder, Honorable Mushoti, Honorable Mwima. So, minutes adopted. Then we go to the report of the Committee on Oversight Visit to Supported Employment Enterprises in Abeni Fetri in Cape Town, Western Cape. It's a one-page report with the recommendations. Do we adopt the report? Honorable Tim?
See, I note the reports, and I do remember that we discussed a lot of these items on the report. Just two issues. First of all, there's nothing here relating to the actual facility we went to visit whatsoever. And I think we all agreed on that particular day that that is supported employment enterprises was something that we should really promote, particularly amongst all departments, that they actually support the enterprise to make it more sustainable. Because if you remember, that particular support employment enterprises said that they were trying to be self-sustaining and support themselves. And we had a discussion about how we would try and in some way encourage all departments to support them for their office furnishings, etc., etc., etc. And also, I believe that we also commended the work they were doing and all that sort of thing. And I just see nothing. It's almost like we had a meeting there about these issues, which were all valid, but nothing about the actual the actual facility itself. And I do think the report should surely include something relating to our tour around the facility, our observations of the facility, etc., etc. So I think that the report is incomplete. And then finally, under recommendation, the sentence doesn't make sense to me. The select committee should identify and invite all affected stakeholders. The departments can recruit, but it didn't say invite all affected stakeholders to do what? Are we inviting them to a bar? Or, you know, or to, you should say, to engage on the following issues or whatever the case may be. So those are just your material versions, Chair. I'm not trying to slow your process down, but I think there's a problem there. Thank you.
No problem. Perhaps what I think I should suggest Dr. Mohel, corner advice, is that perhaps the honorable team or every member of the committee, I suggest that we are not going to adopt the report now. We suggest that the members perhaps can send it to committee secretary, maybe their own understanding or things that are omitted in the report, send them to the committee secretary so that they are included in the report, and then we'll adopt the report. Can I suggest that because the only time now we'll be able to meet again, even then it will be difficult to deal with the report, will be on the 14th of April. Even then will be a joint meeting with the NA on the annual performance plan of the Department of Trade and Industry. So it will be difficult then to adopt the report in a meeting like that. Can I suggest that if we can have it, those inputs today, so that because it's then in the meeting, because we look tomorrow of the select committee on public, just we have a slot on that part just to adopt that report. Just maybe say for 10 minutes, or just we change the committee into this meeting, maybe after we finish, just to adopt the report. Because my fear is that if that whole week and the following week, we'll be having these joint meetings with the portfolio committees on the EPPs of all the departments, the departments of the two committees. We might not have a meeting like this one of only this select committee where we'll be able to adopt the report on our own. What that would mean then we'll have to wait for, say, May to adopt this report. So that's why I want to appeal, if we can get all the inputs today, they get consolidated, and then tomorrow after we finish with the Select Committee on Public Works and Infrastructure, we convene the Select Committee on Trade so that we can adopt the report. Is that fine?
Fine.
Okay. All right. No, thank you very much, honorable members, for your understanding. Let me take this opportunity now to welcome the Department of Small Business Development and its NDT, Small Enterprise Development Agency, and I will hand over now to the chairperson of the NDT. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, thank you for the invitation. As mentioned earlier, I'm the newly appointed acting chairperson of CEDA, replacing Mr. Sonwemi. We are honored to be presenting to you today, and I have my team ready to present to you our progress and challenges in relation to the annual report. We will be touching on matters that were emphasized on the SONA as well as on the budget speech. We'll be talking about our priorities, and we will answer all the questions that you have for us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Can we then start with the report now? The time is 4:15, so can we finish with the report at 11, so that we allow opportunity for members to ask questions, and then we have responses. Thank you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning again to everybody. I take it that we have copies of the presentation, all of us. If not, yeah, okay. I take it it's also okay if I just present without it being flattered. Otherwise, we do have a soft copy.
Oh, there's a problem.
No, there isn't a problem, but I was not sure. Usually, secretariat would take care of that, but we have a copy with us. We can make arrangements.
So what is happening?
No. I'm just trying to see if the connection is working or not.
You can continue what is trying to connect.
Oh, okay. That's fine. and apologies for my voice. I must declare up front that yes, I have flu, but it has been tested.
It's
the general one. It has been tested. There was no reason for quarantine. I feel safe around me. Thank you. Our presentation today is following the format in terms of the structure is presented. We are going to talk to our performance statement, delivery trends in terms of delivery against our targets, touch on our partnerships as well as touch on the human resource and financial health of the organization. And of course, in between, we are also flighting some of our success stories. And finally, we will also touch on the issues of governance within CEDA. The next slide, it's a slide that is just touching on the alignment in terms of our priorities to say where do we find alignment in the work that we are doing. We are guided by the National Development Plan in terms of where the focus on small business should be, the medium-term strategic framework, and the nine-point plan. At the time of preparing the plan for the report, we are presenting those were the priorities. I won't get into the detail of them, but on the slide that is already there, I could say that as the organization, alongside what I have flighted previously, we are making sure that we are aligned in terms of the National Treasury Framework. When you see the years that we are reflecting there, we always compare ourselves with the baseline to say planning and performance, as well as the three-year projection, though we are focusing now on 18-19. Then priorities in terms of impact, Ms. Mzizi, don't be too fast, I'll signal when we must move. We are measuring turnover in the businesses, jobs created, jobs sustained, and as well as focus that we are making and impact that we are making in terms of rural and township development of entrepreneurs in those spaces, as well as making sure that we are focused on making efforts to mainstream to attend to the needs in terms of enterprising for people with disabilities. We can move to the next slide. On this slide, we are indicating our strategic map to say what has been the priorities in the year that we are reporting on. Key priorities were to make sure that we satisfy our stakeholders, the key stakeholder being the entrepreneurs and the shareholder, entrepreneurs as within the ecosystem through our ecosystem partnership support, and as well improve customer satisfaction, meaning the entrepreneurs that we impact on directly, as our strategy is twofold. We assist other institutions to support enterprises, and we also directly intervene. And the under line perspectives in terms of finance, in terms of internal processes and organizational capacity. Those are internal focused interventions to say as an organization what do we need to focus on to make sure that we achieve the top ones. Moving into the next slide, there we are actually getting into the issues of the performance now. In the year, up to the end of the year, we measured ourselves against 29 strategic indicators, of which we achieved 27 of them, giving ourselves 93% performance against our targets in the APP. And upfront, we do highlight or note where we feel we could have done better. Sorry for the spelling there. The number of clients that are supported through enterprise coaching, as well as value leveraged from partners, as I have apologized for spelling, spell check couldn't pick that because it's still an English word. The next slide, yes, the next slide. Sorry. The next slide is giving reasons for why we have not done well in these areas. Our coaching program is a 10-year program, a 10-month program that is a multi-year program. And of course, along the way, we do have intrapreneurs that drop off, as we were also evaluating the program in that specific year. Many indicated that the program is a bit long. However, the other impact were that within our coaching interventions, as taking place in the incubators, themselves that we are coaching in terms of how to do certain things, we had a number of other governance matters to address there, as we did in the specific year, a governance review in our incubators. Value leveraged here, that's when partners would go along with us, making commitments on certain things, but by the end of the year, we have not yet signed off the agreements with them. And then diagnostic assessment, that's when we are making first contact with the client, and then we would do some assessments again here. The turnaround time, sometimes it takes longer when we have a long list of intrapreneurs that are waiting in relation to the ratio of our business advisors. Usually we like to do the diagnostics ourselves internally than outsourcing them. So everyone whom we have not attended to in this year would be carried forward into the following year. Budgets demand, again, in this year we've seen ourselves having a situation where some of the funds that we had to wait for National Treasury to give us approval to use the funds, as they were funds carried over from the previous year. Or some programs, as this year is also a year by which or during which we were adopting some programs from the department to implement them after the department has done initial implementation of those programs on a pilot scale, and then we have to fully roll out. And sometimes the transition in movement of the program takes longer than we had anticipated. And then the next slide, we are talking now to our highlight programs. One of our highlight programs is a program that we are implementing with schools across the provinces, where we are taking between grade 10 to 12 learners, and we are taking them into an entrepreneurship journey. And this is a 6 months, more or less, a program that ends up with awards, and young people are coached to initiate some enterprising initiatives. And I must say, we are pleased with what we see the young people doing in terms of their success stories, programs, and interventions that are speaking to the challenges within their communities, as we see here the winners in terms of what they have come up in terms of applications they have developed as the year was focused on how to assist the young people develop some apps that are solution, IT solution driven applications for problem solving. In impact, our reach to our clients has been fairly increasing compared to the previous year. The graph is rising, having touched 42,000 clients across the provinces, and having worked with 30,000 clients, and of those clients we have implemented about 4,700 interventions, some being group interventions. Impact companies assisted, 10,000 companies went through our diagnostic assessments, of which 9,000 have gone to our training programs, and 861 clients have been trained on international and national standards in terms of market access standards through what we call our export readiness program, in particular for the international standards, and as well as our support to the cooperatives, where we're taking cooperatives from facilitation to activation stage. so we would be called maybe by a department that is interested in providing funding to a certain group of cooperatives, but they are not yet formalized, and then we would assist in the formalization process and post-funding process to give them necessary support. Next slide. On that slide, we are continuing on the impact factors, 2,800 young people as our incubators. They are carrying mainly youths of the country, about more than 85% of people in our incubators are young people. 465 clients that have been supported through our innovation and technology transfer program. The technology transfer program also has a fund that enables in terms of capacity strengthening through and productivity improvement through tooling and machinery, where we are assisting companies to acquire what is needed most in their companies for those regions, as well as quality interventions, where we work with standards bodies like SAPS, and we make sure that the products of the entrepreneurs can get into markets aligned to the specifications that are required in terms of product specifications as standards, industry standards that are required. Impact, we've seen jobs being created. We've seen ourselves saving some jobs by saving companies that would have gone under if it was not for our interventions. And we have also seen the turnover of companies in the portfolio of those that we have assisted growing, which is, could say, different from what you see in terms of the general trend when you are looking at reports like BER that are saying companies are growing in number, but the turnover that they are making is declining. The next slide, this slide is just indicating the spread of the companies that we have assisted, as I have explained earlier, the province, and it's also indicating the frequently needed support from us to say what companies are looking for greatly for support in their growth plans. I won't go on each one of them list by list, but what I'm signaling is that we are tracking our companies that are assisted by us, and we are also tracking their needs in an effort as well to find other partners that can supplement our support interventions. The next slide is talking to some special projects that we implemented during this year. These projects, I must say, are aligned as well to what one would see in the SONA and the budget speech of the minister in that specific year. One area where we had to deepen our reach is market access. So this year, through the department, an initiative that was started there, we had to implement full rollout of our enterprise incubation program, which is an incubation program that is specifically linking those that are incubated to specific market opportunities, e.g. servicing certain offtakes as contracted through partnerships with the private sector, and we are creating an environment to nurture entrepreneurs to provide what is needed in those markets. The informal micro enterprise development program, which is a program we have been going with in township and rural areas, and of course what we did not finish in this financial year according to our plan was certainly carried over to the next financial year 2019-20, and we have finalized our obligations according to the targets that we intended to reach in terms of areas working with the municipalities. This program, we are also working in partnership with the municipalities in implementing it. The next one, in terms of our highlight programs as well, as mentioned in the SONA, It's the incubation program whereby we were also looking at how to strengthen partnerships within the incubation ecosystem as a whole. And one of the things that we also introduced in this year was a program that is supporting corporates when they want to establish their own incubators, what we call the Growth Garage Supplier Development Model Incubator. I am happy to say we have, as I speak, finalized and implementing that program with Gibela, which is our maiden initiative in line with what we are starting here. Again, the other area where we focused on was introducing entrepreneurship in centers of learning, talking about the TVETs, where we are looking at how to couple the skill of those that are in TVET colleges with entrepreneurship. And of course, in doing all this, we are seeking partnerships with others, and we are seeking strengthening the ecosystem. Hence, we also rolled out a specific program that assists management in the ecosystem of incubators to go through some formal training of how to manage the incubators and governance issues around that, which is the IGMDP program that we are implementing with the University of Pretoria. And I must say, the success we have made in this program is now encouraging us to look at expanding this program through other universities. We are looking at modalities to do that. And the next slide is also talking at the strengthening of our incubation portfolio. We also have expanded the number of incubators that we are assisting. And we also strengthened through different partnerships the platform of the incubation ecosystem engagement, which is the SABIC conference that we implement every second year. And this program enables us to benchmark with other countries as well and to establish platforms for our incubators to connect with incubation ecosystem in other countries. And we also introduced what we initially started as Pitch and Perfect. Now it's known as Pitch for Funding, because once we started the pitching program for various opportunities for the small enterprises, and later, as in the following year, it was narrowed down to be a program that we use to focus support in terms of access to funding. The next slide. We are again there talking to some key initiatives during this year. One of the things that we also emphasized on was an engagement with the private sector and the SOEs. So we had a couple of roundtable sessions implemented with these partners to focus as well on IR solutions, as I have a line in the previous slide that was talking about digital solutions that are brought into our TVET colleges or our incubation centers. And of course, we also started what we call the innovation forum, where we are ensuring that we build a common agenda within the incubation ecosystem in terms of driving innovation and leveraging and securing partners from the private sector. And we are also participating in other platforms like SAPTIA, TEPCAMP, SAPTIA being one of the initiatives that we supported in resuscitating as an initiative that is assisting in pulling the ecosystem together through development programs for the incubation ecosystem. The next slide, we are looking there into issues of setting standards, whereby we are working with SANAS, but in terms of what we are doing with SANAS, SANAS also contributed to our own programs by making sure that we have more funds for the conformity assessment support that we are giving to our incubators, which is linked to the product certification and standards that I mentioned earlier. To focus on support for youth We also concluded a three-year employment service agreement or partnership agreement with Youth Employment Services. But on our side, the program is a program that is looking at mainstreaming young people into our incubators, making our incubation centers a potential learning center, learning centers for young people. We are also happy to see other SOEs joining our initiatives, as here I am signaling a partnership that has been reached with ECIC that is contributing to our technology transfer fund. And going to the next slide. On this slide, again, we have seen as a highlight for the year, one big support that is coming from MICAD, which is a company with a home base in France but represented in South Africa, that has supported our initiative in the TVET by making sure that our maker spaces as well in these TVETs and centers for entrepreneurship and incubation are having access to 3D design solution, which is helping them to do things better, smarter, and faster where they are prototyping certain things in their design work. The next slide, without going company by company, by clustering, by sectors, to say in this financial year and companies that we have assisted, where have we seen the greatest good results? They have been in our incubation space as an example, but also outside our incubation space, but by provinces, cutting across all provinces. And we've seen companies in the cleaning and personal care solutions development, hospitality and food services, call center operation, horticulture and agriculture, plastic molding and furniture design, transport logistics, cement and concrete products, innovation in terms of ICT solutions through our iHub in Port Elizabeth, biomed, tech through our incubation in Savent in Cape Town and Infotech in Durban, tooling and machinery as well as oil and gas through Liparo in Johannesburg, which is our incubator, Serebi in Cape Town, solar power generation technologies, as well as the universities, centers, universities of technologies that we are supporting to set up initiatives in terms of small scale but growing incubation centers. And under the technology transfer program, we have also seen mechanical engineering services doing well, as well as ethnic care products, as well as food tech, as an example here given of a company that is doing well in Coffee Pro. But all in all, I am saying across many sectors and across the provinces, across our incubators and our branch network, we have seen some success stories, and the detail about these success stories is in our annual report. The next slide, I'm tempted not to go line by line, knowing the time that has been given to me, but to report that this is our ATP, as it is the structure that is given here. It's our ATP as it is, and what I have reported as not achieved is what is highlighted in color rustic maroon, following through to see what I have already explained in terms of the extent on which for our coaching program we have fallen short, which is on slide 20, the extent on which on our efforts to leverage support from partners, we on slide 26, where we have achieved 23 million funds leveraging against 10 million. However, these are funds that without our facilitation perhaps would not have been unlocked from the various partners. all would have been used in different manners than what we sometimes appreciate, knowing the interventions that the small enterprises require. Going to the next slide, slide 27, there we are just giving a demographics report on our outreach to say our clientele is greatly black owned entrepreneurs, women. We are averaging 43% at this point in time of reporting, but in other provinces we do reach the 50%. We are working hard to increase that target because we are working towards 45 all the time. And then clients in terms of youth, again, as I indicated, mainly in our incubators, the clientele is youthful, but across the branches, we are hitting an average of 49%, jumping between 50 plus and 49%. The next slide, maybe people with disabilities, maybe I should also talk to that. This is one area we have been battling with for various reasons in terms of outreach to them, various reasons in terms of their ability to absorb our interventions, various reasons in terms of them sustaining, holding on the programs when we have secured what kind of assistance to give to them. But it's an area where we would find that we quickly lose some of the entrepreneurs participating in the program. It could be that for various reasons, if it's training, the effort they have to make to go to the training points. Hence, we were trying to work with the organizations to say, can we use your spaces as training points? But some of these organizations, they don't have facilities. People with disabilities are greatly still in their homes. Slide 28 is reflected there. That is just reflecting on demographics for one program that by the end of the year we felt this is the program that is greatly on demand, the technology transfer support program. However, this is also the program through which we are aiming with more resources and what we are trying to leverage from partners to go to township and rural areas, because that's where the kind of support we are providing, we know it's needed most. This is followed by the quality and standards program, which goes to issues of certification that is needed by entrepreneurs to access certain markets. But here I'm just highlighting that these two programs, we realize that we have to invest deeper in them for us to make impact. The next slide, it's a slide that is just reflecting in terms of sectors where we are, different sectors, looking at our network and looking at our network in terms of the incubation network as well as the branch network, to say we are finding clients assisted by us mainly in which sectors. Skipping to the next slide, which is showing our presence across the country at the time of closing the year, showing where we are present in terms of our incubators and our branch offices, and the partners that we have secured to close the gap, closing the gap because we wish that our branch offices would have been in each and every district municipality to start with. However, where we do not have a footprint in such district municipalities, we would find partners that have infrastructure there, and we would use their infrastructure as our service points. In this year, we've seen more partnerships arising from the Mpumalanga province. In terms of incubators, Gauteng remains leading, but we are pleased to see what we see in Eastern Cape, which is one of the rural kind of densely populated province. Of course, this is one area where even in the following year we are seeking more partners to go deeper in underserviced areas. The next slide, it's talking to our partnerships. Key partnerships, as one would pick even in the SONA, is that we wanted to work closely with the services CETA, but other CETAs in general. And we in line with what we had in terms of our targets, the key targeted CETA in this particular year was the services CETA as well as the MES CETA because of the initiatives we had in our plan. And I must say that in both targeted CETAs, we have achieved and secured the partnership that we were looking for. But we also secured other partnerships, like the partnership with the SOEs here mentioned in the next slide, the partnerships with some private sector role players, as well as the partnerships with the places of learning, like business schools. Going to the next slide, partnerships with the other spheres of government, provincial departments that have trusted us to implement some of their programs and to impart some of the knowledge that we have in their environment to assist them in their own program implementation. The next slide is talking to key human resource matters. Our establishment is an establishment that has 704 positions, and by the end of the year we had all key positions filled with 673 warm bodies against our structure. And again, our structure is heavy in terms of the complement of business advisors, which are the key service people. And
sorry.
Again,
I don't know what happened here. Can you try another mic?
Anyway, I'm just about to hand over to the CFO to take us through the finance section of the slide, but I can conclude here by saying that by the time we closed the year, we had a vacancy rate of 4.4%, and I must indicate as well that though one would look at our structure and see as if our structure is heavy at national office, it's because we have programs that are implemented from national office greatly, like the incubation program. It's a centralized program. We liaise with the provincial network, but the key people that drive that program are at national office, as well as our core support in terms of the Learning Academy. The program design and development staff are also at national office. And I hand over to CFO.
For 10 minutes, CFO.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The financial report for 2019, we indicate our revenue and we also put the comparative figures for 2018, and you can see that most of the revenue comes from our department being GSPD, and we indicate the amount of the interest that we earn, as well as the amount of earnings from program and projects. And the amount for, in total amount that we received for the grant is about 724 million versus 721 million of 2018. Total revenue is 878 million. You can see that there's a slight increase as compared to the prior year. And how we've used the money in terms of the expenses, We've got amount of about 16 million that went towards depreciation because of the assets that we have. And for goods and services, it's broken down in terms of the administrative costs, about 144 million. Sitting under administrative costs, these are costs that relate maybe to office leases, et cetera, et cetera. And the amount that went to programs is about 331 million. And the amount that went to personnel costs is about 340 million. I must indicate there that the amount that related to personnel costs relates to people that we use for service delivery. As you have seen when we presented the slide on our manpower, we indicated that there that most of the activities we use our own internal people, and enhance this cost of 340 million. And if you can look at this ratio, it's about 45%, which is in line with the service industry that we are in. And for the year, we had amount of about 45 million versus 30 million, which is the amount that is left for surplus for the year. And I must hastily indicate as well that if one had a deficit, it's taken as irregular because one is not supposed to exceed what has been budgeted for unless it's approved. And amount spent for CAPEX is about 6 million. And the next slide, we just indicated the expenditure trend as compared to the prior years. You can see that our expenditure has been uniform throughout the year from 2016-17 to 2018-19. And the next slide, we indicate the amount spent per program. And versus last year, we can see that we have spent the amount for program one, which is enterprise development, program two, feeder technology program, and what you call administration cost. And the amount and the spending has been uniform throughout the 3 years. And I must indicate that about 79% of the amount spent goes towards core delivery, goes towards assisting our people. And in terms of the operating surplus of that 45 million, which is about 3.8%, we indicate the areas where this amount coming from, and we had a number of vacancies that were in the process of filling in 2018-19, and then these vacancies were filled in 2019-20. The amount is about 11 million, and then we also have the National Gazelles program amount, and we also have about 5 million for capacity building program. And this amount we did spend them later after we got National Treasury's approval. And now what we are also doing, we also indicate there that we are also addressing to make sure that as we spend, we address underspending, which is on slide 44, to indicate the programs that we put in place to make sure that we address the underspending. And the next slide, which is slide number 45, we indicate the audit results, just to indicate that for all the three programs, we had unqualified audit findings. And then overall, for the past, for the comparative years, we had unqualified clean audits. And this shows our commitment to make sure that we spend our monies prudently and we comply with the governance issues. And we also ensured that in terms of the shareholders' compact, we are 100% covered in those areas. And The next slide is on governance and compliance. CEO.
I think whilst the chairperson is looking at her conclusion notes, I can just indicate that that slide is showing that our board has been functional. It has met its obligations in terms of the scheduled meetings for the year. And of course, there were some special meetings. If one was to say the standard is four meetings for the board, but there would be special meetings like when the board has to sign off the financial statements for the year, or where a committee is looking at a pertinent matter in terms of the organizational arrangements. As an example, the year we are reporting on is the year where I know that at the board they were looking at some salary issues for staff, so the HR committee had to have a couple of meetings with the strategy committee, and you see a number of meetings with the SOPC under human resources. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Chair. Thank you, CE. Chair, in conclusion, just to say, to reiterate again, that we are a new board. We have just recently started, and this report is reporting on the former board as well. We started in October. We are fully compliant, and as the CE has said, the meetings, we ensure that we meet regularly to deal with the issues, and the new board members who have been appointed, they are fully qualified for the committees and the roles that they take. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Except that we surprised that the board was appointed last year, isn't it? And already you don't have a chairperson. Perhaps you want to explain that.
Thank you, Chair. As you know, Mr. Sogoni was appointed as the chairperson for the new board. I think there was a bit of a misunderstanding between himself and the minister, so they both, then a mutual decision was taken that he would excuse himself from the board, and that's what he did, and I was appointed as the acting.
So he resigned?
He resigned, Chair. He resigned, yes. Thank you.
CFO, before we allow members to CFO, to ask questions, can you just explain on the annual report, the document, I mean the book, page 154, if you can just explain to us what that page means. You have the book over here, 154.
Okay, thanks, Chair. These are the notes on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And note number 24, we indicate the amount there of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we've got A, B, C, D. A, interest amount of about 6,000. And B is a client of CEDA, where this client colluded with a service provider to utilize funds allocated for other purposes. In this case, it's an amount that we, it was a grant amount that was given to the client, and the client, because they wanted to do some renovations to the business, this client went to the service provider, because we paid the service provider directly. This client went to the service provider to request that cash so that he can use that money, instead of buying machinery, to use that money to renovate his building, his business. And as our people were doing inspection, we picked up that these machineries are not being delivered, And then we did identify this, and we stopped the funds, and the client has paid us back. And but we said we need to take, we've reported the matter to the police. The next one is CEDA employees who transgressed this, our policies. It's about 27,000. And we have taken corrective action to address this. And then the next amount is about clients who were supposed to travel overseas. Due to some challenges, they could not travel. Amount is about 286,000. And we, in this case, we have got contractual agreements with these clients. When we take them to exhibit overseas, if they are unable to travel, we say we recover the monies, but we found here we had a challenge. They indicated to us that they are SMMEs, they don't have the funds, and currently we are dealing with this matter to make sure that we close it. The next amount is the transport of goods to SISMEF in China, where we had to exhibit goods in China. But unfortunately, when the goods arrived in China, there was no clearance letter to clear those goods in China, hence those goods could not be released for exhibition. And we did investigation to establish who is responsible for this, and then we are taking corrective action. And unfortunately, the person that is responsible in CEDA left, left our services, and hence we are looking at ways on how we are addressing this matter. The next one is about 6,000 where a candidate could not attend any interview. And this is the total amount for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I must say that as we stand, almost all this has been addressed. You'll see in the next annual report that all these have been addressed. The next note is on irregular expenditure. And this chair is mainly related to the Gazelles program, whereby in the prior years, as you can see that the amount is coming from the prior years, whereby proper procurement process were not followed in the appointment of this service provider. This is a program that was developed in DTI, and this program came to CEDA to implement. It came with this service provider. And when it came to CEDA, CEDA implemented the program, and we're told that this is the service provider to be used. And the service provider was used, and the AG flagged that the process followed to get the services of this service provider, it was not a competitive process, and then hence the amount was declared as irregular. However, we have indicated that for the Gazelles, we had success stories that we have reported, but it was the process that was followed to appoint that service provider there. And currently, we corrective actions have been taken, and all these amounts are cleared in quarter three of this year. And the other amounts related to transgression in terms of the procurement process, and the other amounts related to office leases that expired, and where as the office lease expired, we didn't have a month-to-month to make sure that as we pay those rental amounts, we have got these month-to-month contracts. And for this the financial year for 2019, all these have been addressed, have been cleared. The amount that relates to the Gazelles, we did engage the National Treasury, and we have cleared this amount. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'll advise you that in the future when you table a report, members of Parliament are very much interested on the two areas. So don't pick and choose what you write in your briefing. In your briefing. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure, members are interested because they are the ones who are adopting the budgets. So they want to see how the monies are being spent, and then also the irregular expenditure. But I'll allow now members to ask questions also maybe on the issues that are also on page 154. Okay, let's start with the Honorable Launt. Can we, before you speak, Honorable Launt, let me just take hands first.
Just clarity.
Okay.
Just want to, not long ago we had CIFA here, and we did ask them to elaborate on how, and the Ministry have also indicated that CIDA and CIFA are going to move closer and closer together, and I haven't heard a single word, maybe for the 2 minutes I left I might have missed it, on how these two entities are moving closer to one another and collaborating. So if I may allow, Jeff, that maybe they can touch on that before we do the follow-up questions, because I've got a few that's linking to that. If you do allow that, if you don't, then I can bring it into my questions.
Okay, can we start with that one then first, before further questions?
Chairperson, it's not only those CIFA.
Okay.
Is that even the national
NEF?
Maybe the information or the response to the
National Empowerment Fund. Can you just clarify
that part before we get more questions?
Thanks, Chairperson. With CIFA.
You have infected this other mic.
No, sir.
I'm saying we're in a lighter note, you infected this other mic.
Oh, okay. New type of it, right? Okay. With CIFA, our collaboration, it's a bottom-up, if I may say. We are collaborating at the provincial level in terms of just our existence. Of the co-location sites that I have mentioned, about 27 of them in the year I am reporting, CIFA and CIDA are in the same building we are co-locating.
So are you in the process of merging to be one organization? I think the question is towards that.
In the year of reporting, the agenda of merging was not on the table, but in the current year, as I am speaking now, the agenda of merging is on the table.
At what stage is it?
At what stage is it? The business case is still being developed, that's what I can say, but beyond that, I think the department is here.
Can the department clarify that aspect? You want to say something? Okay. Department?
Hot potato. Yeah, but as my colleague is saying, the process is in its infancy stage. The business case is being developed. We have requested information from National Treasury, DTI, sorry, who had started some work on the integration of the NEF into IBC. So our Acting Director General has written to his DTIC counterpart to get that information, which we will then read with what will come from the business case for the integration or amalgamation of CIDA and CIFA. Then all together, we will then sit and see how best to implement the process of merging the three entities.
Okay.
I don't have timeline.
You want to add the CEO?
Not on the subject of merging, but I was just continuing on what we are currently doing now. as SIFA and CEDA. So as I said, we are co-locating. We are also now having a process to track deal flow, as we call it, between us, that is preparation of business plans, referral of those to SIFA, and now we have started to track that. Previously it was, okay, we've referred, we've done our part, but now we just want to make sure that we close the gap in terms of the return cases where SIFA has not approved, and we are also looking at common programs in terms of the development of our business advisors, just to align the subject knowledge between us so that our business plans are not declined by us not looking at the metrics that SIFA used to assess the applications that go to them. And finally, we are looking at now how to design a digitalized system that is linking us in terms of enabling easy and quality assured system to track the client between us. NEF, we are working with NEF in terms of referral of the business cases. We are working, but it's not as institutionalized as we have it between SIFA and CEDA, but we are led by clients as they would come to us and say, we are approaching NEF, this is what we want from them, can you assist us to put together the documentation that they require? Can you assist us to interpret what they have given us in response? But at NEF level, I think the size of the client as well is influencing the extent of relationship with us, because our clientele is greatly your micro, small, if not very small, and cooperatives. The medium-sized enterprises, they tend to go on their own to NEF. As I say, we greatly receive them when they're coming back now with challenges, and they're assisting us to unpack the challenges in terms of what they cannot address as needed by NEF from them.
And Chair and honorable members, I think a lot has been said already. Just to add, and maybe just to apologize that we didn't mention anything on that one, we should have put that one on our presentation, because as the CEO has said, there's definitely more collaborations. There are regular meetings, monthly meetings with SIFA to see what we can do and how we can just join our programs and things like that. On NEF, I think it's work in progress, if and when it is required.
I don't know if you still want to ask on this or other questions.
Thank you, Chair. It's a proposal. Unfortunately, due to the structure of the House Select Committees in the NCOP, we touch on different entities, different departments, when our colleagues in the NA has a lot more opportunity to go in depth. And I did raise this when SIFA was here. But Chairperson, it's a proposal to you and the committee to consider this. Is I heard the word bottom-up approach for CEDA, and when we ask the same question to CIFA, they say we are starting at a board level and then we're going down, which is kind of contradictory to one another. So I would suggest, Chairperson, that we reach out to our colleagues on the National Assembly side and maybe get everybody together at once and make sure that we're on the same page, the two bodies speak out of on the same hymn sheet, and then when we go forward, we can start holding both the entities accountable to that, especially in the light of what the President says, we need to try and cut costs at various levels. This is the ideal opportunity to, instead of filling the vacancies, see where you've got the expertise on the one side and you've got a vacancy on the other side, and can't they do something together? It's a link to the question on page, I think, 32. I asked the exact same question about the footprint of CEDA and the footprint of CIFA, and where you have a double footprint in an area, you can combine it, and where the one have a footprint and the other one do not have a footprint, utilize the one building, and that's my concern going forward, that the two are still walking next to one another and duplicating things. So that's a request to you. You can and the colleagues can decide, but I do think that would be a valuable proposal going forward.
Thank you very much, Honourable Lund. Actually, on the 22nd, if you can just note that, on the 22nd of April, we're having the department, 22nd of April, we're having the department, CEDA and CIFA presenting in the two committees, NA and the NCOP committee on the 2nd, on the 22nd. So all three will be present. So, but also we'll be doing that together with the NA. So the points that you are raising will be addressed then in the meeting of the 22nd. If you can diarize that. So the points that you are raising are already covered in the program. Let me then take questions. I don't know if that was you're done with your questions, so that we move up.
I can stop.
Yeah. Let me first take hands again. Honorable Lord, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Tim, want to take
a pass? I'll just before you. Okay. Maybe my colleagues would have covered my question.
All right. Honorable Mathieu Wheeler, Honorable Dango, and then Honorable Moimak. Yeah. Okay. Honorable Lund.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the 8th slide, I've been trying to determine what private sectors do in helping young entrepreneurs, and there's some brilliant programs that's being rolled out where some companies go out and actually give bursaries to people from underprivileged schools in areas that there's not really a footprint. And what I'm trying to just find out, and is again about aligning what everybody is doing. So you touched on your actions and programs in developing entrepreneurship and rewarding people, but I'm just trying to think how do you partner with the private sector, and especially those that go further than what you are doing. I'm more than happy to give you the information of some of the companies that I've now already found out about, but if there's kids that succeed and you give them the rewards at a matric level or grade 11 level, you just leave them and then they need to fight on their own, or do you actually partner them with companies that's willing to take them further so that they already have the idea, they already showed some innovation and put in some work so that they just don't have to fight on their own, and quite often they don't have the safety net or a fallback. Just your comments on that. I leave many of my doubling up questions for that meeting on the 22nd then, but I am concerned on that your annual report page 154. You've mentioned that the one staff member has now left. But what are you doing to flag these individuals so that they don't just be recycled elsewhere in a department or another entity? Also, the companies that you have paid for or you sent their goods overseas, there's two points, I don't have it open now, but I think it's D and E, that is it the same company that was responsible for not pitching up and the goods that you've sent across? And also making sure that they don't tap into any other markets or any other opportunities, or first recoup the losses before you consider assisting them again. Chairperson, I'll stick to that. I'll come back at the end. My notes is a bit dear Makar, and especially with the doubling up that I'll park for next time. So if you allow me a second time after the colleagues, I would appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning once again. You speak of challenges with regard to compliance issues. Is there a way that you could possibly tell us what these challenges are and why you are struggling with these challenges? Because SMMEs and co-ops are the ones that need the majority of assistance, because they are the generators of our little or smaller workforce. You spoke about your 4IR roundtable. Would you say that this was successful? Why I'm asking is because many students are not conversant in 4IR. They're not. We are not on par with other countries, and we should start right at the bottom. This is where we should start the bottom-up approach. Do you, as CEDA, engage with maybe basic education and higher education so that we can see where we stand with regard to this? And then you spoke of TVET colleges that have 3D equipment. It sounds brilliant, but do we have sufficiently trained educators, if we can call it that, to allow our students to be able to use this equipment, and not only the 3D but the robotics? If one has a look at India, where I was last year, robotics and 3D classes, the IT classes as they call them, are started in grade triple R's. They are well in advance, Chair, and I think it would do us, or CEDA, good to engage with the Department of Basic Education and Higher Education to see if we are on par. And then I'm very, very disappointed in the number of people with disabilities, especially in the Free State and Limpopo. Limpopo has the highest number of people with disabilities. And once again, here one could engage with the LSEN schools, coming back to basic education, because many of the learners at LSEN schools are trained in handiwork fields, and maybe we could see you reaching out to them to give them more opportunities in the labour market once they leave school. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. My first question was based on chapter 17, the success story project. I'd like to know if among these projects there is one project from the rural areas which you have assisted. Yeah, because I'm saying this, CEDA is not doing much in rural areas. I was looking at the presentation here. I was also expecting to see the total number of young women that you have assisted in rural areas, but I have seen none. And also the challenges that those small businesses are facing in the rural area is support service that is provided by CEDA. Most of them, they don't even know where CEDA, what is CEDA, what is CEDA assisting people with. We've got a lot of small business that employ 10 to 12 people. You see that this small business is surviving. If CEDA can add to that, it can employ more. But they don't have access of the information. So I just want to know which programs are you doing, or what plans are you putting in place into making sure that you go to rural areas, you find those SMEs, train them, and give them more support. And also the other one, I'll go to page 28. I can see also, I'll also speak about the technology transfer fund that still in the rural area is a problem. So I think if you can try to improve in the rural area side, instead of people saying, for example, we go to CEDA, go to them. There are small businesses who are already existing amongst those areas. If you can do, like, let's say, for example, you do door-to-door, to say, in this municipality, we go to this village, we want to find out how many small businesses are here, which one are functioning, what are the challenges because they are there, they are surviving on their own. If SIDA can do more, I think it can do much better. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, just to return to page 154, what corrective measures have been put in place to ensure that this does not happen again, or where fruitless and wasteful expenditure? Please explain that to us. I think it becomes important. Two is there a relation between the amount of offices and the amount of activity? Because I noticed that in the Western Cape, there's 14 offices, and the activity schedule there is quite high. Just if they could explain that. And have they developed a program for young people and for their clients to actually look at how they can benefit from the Africa Free Trade Agreement to take exports, A, to SADC, which is our neighbors, and B, to the rest of Africa?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me also join the queue of those that are expressing their gratitude to the leadership of SIDA for having honored our invite. my entry point, Chairperson, relates to the contribution that SIDA is making towards the target that we have set for ourselves as a country. Particularly having identified small businesses as one of the main job creators. I'm raising this point against some of the reviews that was made by the International Finance Corporation report on the observation around structural constraints that continue to inhibit the contribution that is supposed to be made by the those small firms or those small businesses that should that should be turning the situation around in terms of employment figures and job creations. Because among the areas that are raised as challenges continues to be the fragmentation in terms of business support and lack of impact in terms of the interventions that we are making, mindful of the fact that SIDA was identified as one of the interventions, but more than that, I think the linkage and support or cooperation between large and small firms in terms of benefiting and highlighting the potentials for growth of small business, particularly the level of training and supply development programs. Can they share light on that? I'm raising this point because there is a slide that talks to success stories projects. I think it's slide number 17. Because I come from Northern Cape, and in particular, Kuruman. I see that one of the success stories there is horticulture. Just looking at the comparative and competitive advantages of that town itself, given the fact that it is a predominantly mining area, and definitely you will have many structures that are operating within the mining industry that will be your support. How was this success story identified against the opportunities that are there within? I know that Kumba has set aside 500 million. As an opportunity for small businesses, particularly from the local, you see. And now you identify horticulture as a success story. Of course, it boils down also to the partnership that we have
trouble with provincial departments. I know the department operates has a platform of NERA, Northern Cape Economic Development Agency. It dishes out money to small enterprises. I would advise that the agency should probably also work hand in hand so that we are able to also then maximize those interventions that the department is making. But more than that, I think to me also what will be critical is the slide that speaks to slide 43, that you are awaiting National Treasury's response on whether to retain or surrender the operating surplus of 25 million. I don't know whether to link to link that to aspect. Is it an understanding which obviously might be linked to underperformance of your business development or what? But also inefficiencies in planning and performance, could it be linked to this 45 million that is still awaiting National Treasury? But biggest fear is what Treasury has done, where there is underspending, they redirect the funds. And in the quest of that redirecting those funds, what will be the impact of that on some of the interventions that we have identified? Because I think what is critical for me is to maximize all opportunities that the government has set aside, particularly to boost the rural economies and township economy. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I don't know if Honorable Tim, you're ready.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Chair. Chair, there seems to be... There seems to be a fragmentation of the various role players and stakeholders that are involved with CEDA. And so I would just like to get some sort of level of assurance from the acting chairperson, maybe the CFO, the CEO, as to what they're going to do to try and resolve fragmentation that basically is inhibiting CEDA in doing its core function. That is the first question I have. That brings in CEFA, and we need to explore, you know, we should always look at best practice models anywhere in the world and where they've worked. And one of the models that comes to my mind always has is the Prince's Trust in the UK. That was sort of like a fund or almost a, it's not a sovereign wealth fund, but it was a fund established by then the Prince of Wales or Prince Charles. And the whole idea was to get young people applied, present a business plan, a business idea, and then provide them with seed capital and a mentorship program to help them actually get their businesses going and then help them grow. You know, just like the Minister of Finance speaks about that plant he always talks about, getting it going and keeping it sustainable. And so when I hear about CEFA and the role that they're playing, it seems that fragmentation is happening there. And I'm not entirely sure, and this will be a question, if I can just pop it in here, is what is the amount of money allocated to CEFA and what do they use it for? Do they just use it for to employ a whole lot of people and to go through the motions, or is there any money actually allocated to CEDA or CEFA to actually put seed capital into small businesses? Young people who want to start, or old people who want to start at any age, wants to start a business and get something going. So that's my question, is how can we resolve the fragmentation, and how can we make CEFA, and can the department plead for Treasury to actually start a fund that helps with seed capital and not just relies on the private sector? The The next question is the 45 million underspending? Now, I understand that that's not the fault of those sitting here in front of us. I get that. But I think you need to give us some level of assurance, or, and not just saying that you'll do it, but give us a plan of what you're going to, I know you're hoping, beyond hope, that Treasury lets you keep the money, okay? We don't know what's going to happen there. So number one, what business plan have you advanced to them to get Treasury to let you keep the funds? And how will you make sure that that doesn't happen at the end of the current financial year? What plans do you have in mind to make sure that doesn't happen? Because we all know that underspending is normally from a lack of planning. And then finally, you know, we've got great researchers in this committee, and one thing it also comes out of the work is that there is a breakdown between provinces, municipalities, and yourselves. So it comes back to that fragmentation question again. What will you be doing to make sure there's a clear line of a working ethic going through, and a level of professionalism as well? I've also picked up complaints that, Chair, there is a concern that when people come for support to CEDA, that they're treated shoddily. They're not treated very professionally. They're not treated in the best possible way they could be treated by people who are very professional. Almost a Bartepele thing, but a bit different. But basically saying, right, you're here, let's start a business. Let's be enthusiastic about it. Let's drive it, you know. Let's be Asian Tigers, you know. We're going to go for it, and we're going to get this done. So I think that I've received complaints that there is a lack of professionalism there. So my question to the acting chairperson is, what are her plans and her board's plans to actually get that level of professionalism and excitement and energy up in CEDA? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable, I'm sure you forgot something in your list of questions.
Thank you very much, Chair. I forgot to ask this question on page 29 on the business assisted across CEDA networks. I can see here in tourism they say 2% ICT. Maybe if the answering question, if they can elaborate it further for me to understand what is happening here, because in this slide I don't understand it that much. Whether it's the assisted 2% or 0% on ICT on slide 29. So while they're answering questions, they can elaborate it further for me. What does this table mean?
From my mark?
Just two issues. On the incubation partnership model was developed consortium based at Niger. It would be nice just to get a sense of what are those models and things. If you could be presented with the and also probably the report on that roundtable session with private sector and state and enterprise, because in terms of the work that we are doing, We are spread across the country in terms of our provinces, so that it becomes important that the lessons learned in other areas in our interface with our communities at the level of exercising our oversight, we are also able to give guidance, if we can get a report on that.
I think some of the questions before you respond, Chair, I think will have to be also answered by the department. You know, the NDP talks about 11 million jobs that should be created by 2030, and it further says that 90% of those are in the small business sector. I don't know if that's why I'm saying maybe the department also need to come in here, because I don't think CEDA alone would have to be responsible for this 90% of the 11 million. Whether there is any way of the monitoring mechanism so that by 2030 you'll be able to say we have reached the 90%, but also throughout the period, because you don't have to wait for 2030, you need to be saying each year we've achieved or set a target for yourself in terms of job creation out of the 11 million. So that you're saying each year this is a target. I'm not saying that is a responsibility only of the small business development, but also in terms of coordination, because I know that there are also other players, even in terms of other departments, who within themselves have an element of small business development. If you talk, for example, Department of Rural Development, agriculture, there's an element of small scale farmers, so that to me is small business development. If you go to tourism, there's an element of small business development. Most of the department have those units within themselves. But then what is the role of the small business development in terms of coordinating all those, without necessarily taking the responsibility of running, but getting information as to what each of these departments are doing, including the other agencies, particularly the provincial development agencies. Honorable Moimang was making an example of an agency, I think in his province. I know from the province I come from, the Eastern Cape, there's an agency that is called the Eastern Cape Development Corporation, ECDC. It also has within itself a unit that is responsible for small business development. So how are you then coordinating all these so that you at the end of the day you are able to measure yourself as to how far you are with regard to the 90% that you are responsible for in terms of ensuring that the jobs are created within that small business development. The other issues that I just want to emphasize on some of the points that were raised by members, particularly the issue of the township and rural areas. The point that is raised by Honorable Matevula. I wish that you could be able to break down, in terms of your report, the province, not just a province, there's so many incubators that companies that you've asked in terms of incubation and all that, but be able to be specific in terms of which rural areas, which townships, in all the provinces, and also what are your communication or marketing strategies that you employ. Most people listen to radio station and community radio station. Are you interacting with those community radio stations so that people can be aware of your services as CEDA? The minister in the is also talking about I don't know whether it's, I think it's a CEO who's talking about European funding. I don't know if you can just elaborate on that, CEO, has there been any access by small businesses with regard to that particular European Union funding. I'm also interested on how you conducted this stakeholder satisfactory survey, but I'm also worried about the achievement of 66%. That means there's a 34% that is also not satisfied with your services. Maybe the point that is raised by Honorable Tim about some clients treated as children. But also I want to know how you conduct. Do you conduct it yourself, or is there an independent organization that is doing it on your behalf? Because if you conduct it yourself, then I think there might be some biasness if you're doing that. I know I used to have a VW car a long time ago. When I take it to a VW dealer for service, I would phone by somebody who is independent. The person would mention that he doesn't work for VW, but they've got a data of the cars that have been to VW in my area for service. And now it's the person who wants to know how satisfied I am. I don't know if you would do it a similar way so that you leave it to an independent organization. I just want to also, can you just clarify, there's a Gazelle project, what is it all about, so that we clear, because there's a lot of money that is going there towards this particular project. I think those are, I just wanted to also to add to the question that we raised by members with regard to those points. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members for the questions. I'll answer a couple, then my team will answer the rest of the questions. I think maybe I'll start with the Chairperson's question on the 11 million jobs by 2020 that 90% of should come from SMMEs. Chair, what we tried to do, we obviously tried to look at 2030 and the jobs that we said would be created and break it down to where we are currently. For example, for 2020, the target is for us to create 7,000, right? So with this 7,000, that having come from the board, approved by the board, that 7,000 jobs that were created is then cascaded to the executive team, and then the executive teams cascaded down to their members. So each program will then subdivide that 7,000 to say these are the jobs that will be created by incubation, or these are the jobs that will be created by the coaching program, like that. So then on our committee meetings, particularly the SOPC, where they have to then report how we are doing with our strategy implementation and how our targets are doing, this will then be reported, and we will obviously challenge where things are not happening. Because the service providers or the people who are doing these programs, your incubation for example, they also are provided with funding that is linked to the jobs that they have agreed they will create for those incubations. So throughout the structures, everybody has responsibility of what they need to create, and the monitoring and the evaluation and changing of tactics if you know those are not achieved. So that's how we do it, on the monitoring and evaluation. And yes, you are right, we have to work with others because we can't be doing all that by ourselves. And then this would then talk to the question that was asked by Honorable Tim, who was talking about the fragmentation. What we have seen, yes, I think the whole government has seen that there's duplication and fragmentation, and we should all be working closer and with each other. So we've touched on the issue of CIFA, that we started collaborating with CIFA, because for us we are saying if we are training people on business plans, on doing, then the next challenge is how do you then access the funding. So CIFA is the one that's giving the funding, so working with them to say what is it that you are requiring so that we can ensure the people qualify. Once they've done the training, they can then get the funding. And also working with various private partners. What we also do, and I think this will then touch on the Honourable Matebula's question on what are we doing for the rural and township economies. I think our first point of call is to say that we can do more. Definitely we can do more. And with that, what we have said as a board, we've said that our reporting structure, and you have said that if you could break it down, Chair, I think you were saying, can we break it down? Because when we do our reporting, we just say KZN. And for all we can say about KZN, it can all be in the Etekwini, the urban municipality. So we have adopted as a board to say we are adopting the district municipality approach of when it comes to reporting. And this is what we're actually been talking with the CEO to say that next time when we do our presentation for the committee, we must ensure we look at it from a district municipal approach, because it's then where you see
where the gaps are. So we definitely have gaps, because if you look at KZN, we have about 10 districts, municipalities, and we have touched on about four of those municipalities. And what about the rest? We haven't done. And those, unfortunately, tend to be the rural area. So if you say, for example, if you look at incubation, our incubators, the organizations, they know they have been concentrating on the urban area because it's easy access, infrastructure, and all of that is easy to implement. But with them having now, having the experience, having worked, having excelled in what they are doing, they will be taking that that model and implementing it in the rural areas. I think the other members will then talk exactly on where we are on rural areas, but yes, maybe a first point to say, for example, the example that I've made on KZN, that's 10 and we're only touching on about 4. But I'll ask the executives to go deeper into that. But Honorable Matabula, as I say, from next time we will be doing the district reporting, because it's an adoption that we have taken as a board. Chair, I also wanted to talk on the issue of accessibility, or people knowing about what is it that we are doing, because I think you were saying that people don't know what is CEDA. What are we doing to do that? So our marketing, we are in a process of actually getting a marketing team or marketing company to assist our marketing department, because we have seen that's where we actually are failing to be talking to the right people. So we will be engaging all types of media, because we've spoken about youth as well, and we know that youth are on social in digital platforms, even if when they are in rural areas. What are we doing from a marketing perspective to ensure we do that? And there's been an increase as well in engaging with community radios, just to talk about what we are doing. We haven't done the door-to-door as you have proposed, but we have gone to communities, and we've had these road shows where we work in collaboration with CIFA, with the different programs that we're working together to say this is what we do, these are the opportunities. But I'm not saying we can't do more. We definitely need to be doing more on those items. The Honorable Tim also spoke on the issue of professionalization of staff and what we are doing about it. I think the CE in her answer, she will touch on what we are doing, because particularly the people we've been aiming, the complaints that we've been receiving have been on our business advisors. So those are the people who are the first point of call when our business, our entrepreneurs go there. So there's an intense program that has been developed. There are different seminars where we are taking them to sort of get them to understand who are our customers. We have different customers, and how do you then treat those customers professionally? So CE will touch more on that program, because I know it's a program that's very close to her heart, and it's one of her legacy programs, as she calls it. Maybe I can also just touch on, let's see what else I can touch on. Let me leave it at that, and then I will also just, as I remember the things that I wanted to touch on, then I'll come back to that, Chair, in the interest of time. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Upfront, I must indicate that so that they prepare themselves, CFO, you'll deal with all the questions, but this is the understanding issue. So I know we have defended the money from National Treasury, and we managed to retain what we had not spent, but paid the account. And then Ms. Kungwane, who is head for our incubation program, will talk to all the matters. When we were talking about the compliance issues, it was more focusing on compliance issues on our incubation ecosystem network that we are supporting. So she will talk to that when I also mentioned the review and all things that came up and that we are fixing with them, that sometimes are the reasons for us not to be able to give them the money as scheduled to them. The roundtables as well for IR issues and the innovation summit, that's all in one portfolio, including maybe what we are doing in terms of the 3D solutions to the TVET.
And then on other matters, starting on the issue of our success stories, and specifically named was Northern Cape and horticulture, and the question was, how are we coming up with these success stories? Of course, our interventions per province, they are aligned to the economic activities of the province, because we are driven by business to say what should we be focusing on. We are driven by the provincial strategies to say what should we. We are sitting with the IDPs in terms of the municipalities when they are doing their IDP planning, integrated development plans in the municipality. So we sit in those forums just to understand what's the economic climate, therefore what should we be focusing on. But when we are talking success stories, we are just talking about one or three as one amongst the pool. What we have, and quarterly, we check the entrepreneurs that we have assisted. It's like a silent competition, and we look at various things, turnover, jobs created, access to market, the impact of our intervention, and we look at a set of things, and quarterly we say, of the entrepreneurs we have assisted, who are the top in terms of receiving the support and making an impact of the support. And then annually we check amongst those that we have been pushing by identifying quarterly to say, okay, overall winners in this province, who are they? And we have something that we call an ambassador club. And these are the entrepreneurs that we use even for certain things, to talk to other entrepreneurs about our programs, because they've experienced them. When we are doing the program design and development, we go to them, we use them as our reference groups. So I'm just explaining the story behind the success stories. However, I can say, in Northern Cape, we have put into, or we put close to our heart, the issue of minerals beneficiation. If I was to speak to that specifically, that's where we have the showcase, the showstopper in terms of our incubator, that has an academy that teaches young people diamond cutting, polishing, and design. Linked to the academy, an incubation point where they are doing entrepreneurial training and development. And as I speak, that incubator is linking with a university in China. For the first time, they are working on a curriculum that's talking about diamonds of South Africa, training even in Chinese. They have been given a partnership platform where now these designers of diamonds from South Africa will be having a platform to sell, and they have recently launched a brand, Diamonds of South Africa, which is a brand soon you will also find on Amazon. And then talking about the fragmentation and how we are resolving that, and touching on, starting with our relationship with CIFA, I must clarify to say, please, don't read any contradiction in the statement that we've given. When I was coming bottom up and when he was going top down, it's a point of emphasis in terms of us as CEOs, where have we engaged with the process? You may recall when CEO CIFA presented himself, his acting CEO, who came when we were already on a process, which is the bottom-up process that I talked about with the previous CEO. But now where he is connecting with the whole, it's when I was saying, now we are trying to institutionalize this and have proper design systems between us, and linking it to the sixth administration priorities in terms of specific initiatives now that we should be implementing in terms of what is currently starting to happen, having even a structure which is a structure of committees chaired by our board chairpersons, where we sit down together and evaluate what we are doing between us. So I think it was just a matter of emphasis. which side one is coming from. And then other role players, fragmentation, our first point of focus and attention to try and build down walls of fragmentation once we've spoken to us, SIDA and SIFA, was to say, how do we go to our DFIs, other DFIs? And as I said, in the provinces, SIDA is facilitating platforms where orderly there is an engagement with the DFIs in a specific province, so that there can be a sharing of what kind of entrepreneurs are passing through you, what kind of entrepreneurs you want to refer to each other, and what kind of lessons we should be sharing with others, with each other. What kind of, as it is the discussion now, showcasing the work of government together, what kind of vehicle should we be using? But in addition to that, we focused on the local government space in terms of the LED officials, where as SIDA we've identified certain tools that we use for client assistance, where we said these kind of tools we can afford not to monopolize them and make them SIDA tools, but to share them with other role players. And we're starting with the municipalities. The LED officers are receiving training from SIDA, but now we are just dealing with how to manage the scale of what we have started. Hence, we are speaking to the National School of Government to say, you are already training the municipalities. How do we kick it back on what you are already doing? Because at one stage, we see they may have to make a financial contribution to the investment that you are making. Therefore, let us use the vehicle you already have, where municipalities pay for certain services, so that at least we don't have a financial burden now of training the LED officers. Where municipalities can contribute, we make means to do that. But overall, aligned with the sixth administration priorities, as we are speaking, we are working on a coordination mechanism, which we call the district coordination model. We are speaking to DCOG, we are speaking to COGTA, we are speaking to our own department, to say how do we model this working hand in hand with the district municipalities through the mayoral council, so that everybody knows what is happening on the ground. And us talking systems, one of the main things in that plan, a system that will be a system that helps us to pull and analyze information about what entrepreneurs are in that specific district municipality, which talks to what Mem said. We will be now working towards reporting per district municipality. And of course, professionalization of our environment, we are talking to two things in the main. We are talking to professionalization of our staff at SIDA, where we started a process of benchmarking our officials, especially the business advisors, to the industry standards. We went through a process of assessing them, working with IBASA, and out of that, we worked on a competency development plan for them, which means now when they go on training, it's based on their assessment reports. But in addition to that, we are also looking at professionalization of practitioners, not necessarily of SIDA nature, those that we use, as we use our own practitioners, we use also external independent practitioners in a way of contributing as well to the center. Hence, we started the project I reported on that we're working on with services SITA, where we are coming up with programs that are accredited programs for the sector. We are doing design and development, working with SIDA, accreditation of practitioners. We are also working on a standard framework for the practitioners, as much as we are working on a standard framework for the incubators. And again, Ms. Kogane, you'll add on your portfolio, because you'll certainly touch on that when you're speaking to innovation forums and other things, the Gibela round at the Gibela project. And then the National Gazelle program, what kind of program is this? This is a program that is meant to be an accelerator program in nature, because it's looking at growth potential enterprises to say, how do we fast track their growth using specific interventions and using specific model to track their growth. So we have been using the Value Builder model as a bespoke model that helps us to look at different dimensions. That also helps these enterprises to say, how do they work out their, I'd say, succession plan, where we have a part in the program where we would even take out the intrapreneur, the jockey from the company and say, you are given different assignments, go do this. You don't have to be in your company because we want to test, can your company survive and continue if you are not there? So the emphasis again there is how do we enrich their means to go to markets as well as technology. Hence we have the grant component of that assists them to acquire tools and machinery that they require. Other than that, we also have of their grant 20% set aside just for their business development needs. We use the business doctors model where we say the interventions must be needs-based, it's not generic. So you do your value builder score, we work on certain things with you, and it's based on what is needed at a specific point that you gonna tap on this money to make sure that everything is integrated in their development plan. We have success stories out of this. If I can mention companies like Ripple that are in energy, can mention companies like Set Food that is doing a specific design for incinerators, for hospitals. If I can mention companies in the horticulture field that have done, so we have failures, we have successes, because other companies, they couldn't take the pressure that is coming out of this program, and they just said, this is too much for me. I feel I'm drowning in this. I still need to take care of this and this in my business. But we can't force a company when it feels like this is not for me. I need something else than this. But what we do, we migrate those companies to our normal business development support services, so they will be taken care of by our branches. And unfortunately, the program is not going to continue. However, we are coming up with a different model to say, how do we still continue modeling what we want to model for high impact interventions as our own approach to medium-sized businesses in terms of continuing support on them. And then, so should I continue? I leave it to you, the EU funding. I think you'll provide a more comprehensive report on EU funding, what it covers, where is it?
You can talk about it. I'll add.
Okay. EU funding for us as CEDA, we are receiving support in various forms in there. Firstly, we have been part of the discussions in terms of the modeling of the program and the interventions of the program. But in addition, we are receiving technical assistance that is assisting us to design specific programs. I'll make mention our supplier development program, who are reviewing it, working with the EU. The model that I'm talking about, the district coordination model, we are working on it using funding from EU. Some of our digital incubators, as we were on the plan to expand the footprint and model focusing on digital hubs than the generic incubators, who are working with the EU there. But in terms of as well piggybacking on the funds that are going to be funds now for on lending as administered by CIFA, we are part of the working groups in that. And I can say that some of our incubators, they have been assisted in preparing their proposals to pitch to be one of those fund managers, and we've seen two of our incubators receiving support in that regard. But in terms of general deal flow preparation, when companies go there to apply for those funds, we are the engine now that says deal flow preparation into, or when companies have applied and they are coming back and certain things have to be polished in their business plans, we are the receiving point. So we are very much involved in the implementation of those funds. And this, the last one.
Sorry, the specific amount that is allocated to South Africa.
South Africa, 52 million euros.
Euros, yeah.
Yeah, that's an allocation to South Africa.
So how much of that has been spent?
Amount spent.
I don't know.
Okay, we will spend up everything.
Yeah.
Once we get to that.
Yeah, okay. And then I think as well, in something I'd like to flag that is one of what Madam Chairperson said, it's one of our head projects in the context of us working on the different things we are working on in terms of the professionalization of the centre, business development services, and our own practitioners. Previously we've had an academy which we still have at CEDA, but this academy is focusing on our staff, except for fewer instances where some people would ask us to help train their business development service people. And out of a pilot that we did with services CEDA, that stimulated more interest in the work that we are doing with the municipalities, that stimulated more interest to say there isn't a place where companies, even the private sector, can go to say I'm going there to learn some disciplines about the whole thing of business development support services. Now we are looking at our academy to say how can we reposition it to be that national center where people can go to and learn about entrepreneurship. We see what is happening in the business schools, but that's a different level, and we will be connecting with some of the universities that are running business schools when we are looking now at connecting the academy, but for qualifications than connecting to the academy for in-service training. The academy at CEDA will be more for in-service training, say corporates as well. They have their transformation people that are leading their enterprise development programs. Where do they go to? Even government departments, they do various things in enterprise development support, but do they have the know-how, the people that are leading those programs? So that's the kind of gap that we wish to close through our academy. We are working on a business plan on that. And Ms. Pongwan can continue.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start with the one that was saying what is the private sector is going to support young entrepreneurs. I want to highlight that we have a partnership with the Youth Employment Service, which is YES. We both signed an agreement to establish township hubs. They also have access to the cohorts of youth where that is paid, where their cost is being paid by the private sector to be placed in SMMEs or big companies. So we've offered this to do that networking and connecting between the SME that is looking for a temp to skill, and from YES program the pool of that. So that's one of the initiatives. Also, we've got then the what we call it centers for entrepreneurship repeat incubators that are located in TVET colleges. We have partners with private sector who are supporting those centers. To name the few, Bosch, they're even offering the technical skills, the Ford with some of the market access for the young people, in the one that is in the automotive sector, in Rustenburg, in one of the township on your way to Sun City. The other one, the Samsung the other one, Samsung, we also providing upskilling and access to market for youth that is based on the one in Katlehong. So we've got those, but I think I've heard you saying that you've got contacts that you are willing to share.
So he said, okay.
So I'll be grateful if you can share those contacts, because we need a lot more opportunities for that. And also the issue of challenges regarding compliance. As you know, National Treasury introduced what is called a Central Supplier Database. So a Central Supplier Database, it flags tax compliance real time. This week you can be complying, then you find that a week later you're not complying. It's no longer the same situation where your tax was valid for a year. Now it's in real time. So sometimes by the time we want to be paying an incubator or a specific supplier, we'll find that they are shocked that, oh, the last time we checked we were tax compliant, now we're not. So we have to wait until they go through that process again and do their submission of return. So it does have impact in delaying our processing of payments. And also another thing that we do, when we pay incubators, we pay performance-based tranche payment to encourage performance. So if you give us 50%, we'll give you 50% money, and then we wait on you to catch up, then we give you back the money. So those are some of the things that are delaying in terms of the speed of processing payments. Then also the other one, whether I would say is the 4II roundtable was a success. I would say it was a success, because in there we were able to even see the gap between the enterprises who are in the ICT space and some of the SMEs that are not in the ICT space. In manufacturing, there's a big gap in terms of understanding issues. And in most cases, you find that SMEs, they're more focused on the bread and butter issues. Digitization is something that is very far from them. So I think that session, it helps them to open their mind to say, you know what, I cannot, if this has to be part of the strategy of my business if I want to see my business surviving the next generation. So we're demonstrating in practical terms, in terms of what does it mean. And I think you also said that how do we then cascade that to use in partnership with the Department of Higher Education. I think our focus in there was more on the entrepreneurs themselves, but I know that there is other department as we're working on this district-based approach. If you talk about telecommunications, they focus more on skills development, where they actually would look at go and training the youth in terms of introducing them to the new skills. So we do have a partnership arrangement with them, but our focus is on enterprise development, and then they are focusing on upskilling in general. And because of this program of the Centers for Entrepreneurship Rapid Incubators, we have a good relationship with the Department of Higher Education, such as they even attending our conduct session, so that they get to understand how should they improve their curriculum to ensure that the SMEs are ready to become entrepreneurs when they finish their course. Because one of the objectives of starting with this program was we wanted to say to entrepreneurs, while you're studying, be thinking about ways how to say that I'm here, I'm acquiring knowledge, but I must also be thinking on how will I be commercializing this knowledge in order to change the mindset of a job seeker, and also saying that I can also be a job creator. So hence this program that was rolled out in the TVET colleges. And in there, I think I'm welcoming. We need more private sector in here, because market access is key in order for the program to succeed. Another area there where you spoke about the skills in the TVET colleges, because in order to improve the value proposition of the Centers of Entrepreneurship Rapid Incubators, we have assisted them to develop a makerspace capabilities, where we are equipping them to be able to produce first stage prototyping for those entrepreneurs in there. They must have capabilities to produce first stage prototyping. What we have done then now, we have requested each and every one of them to employ a qualified technical skills trainer who will be able to use the equipment. So the MECAD company has offered, not only just offered software, but also there's a skills capacity building of those technical trainers that are placed within those TVET colleges, especially in the CFERIs. And then the other one was what plans are in place to support SMEs in rural areas. I think we also did an ecosystem review, especially in the incubation space, and we identify that there is really huge gaps. Most of our network is in urban areas. And we, as we embarking in the 2020 financial year, even in our approved APP, we are prioritizing the rural areas. We've set a target of 44 new incubators that are going to be placed in township and rural areas. As we speak, we've already done 10 this year, as we close this year, and all of them are in townships in all the various provinces. There's nothing that is in the urban areas because we've seen that there is huge gaps. To mention a few, in a village of Masila now we've got an agro incubator in Limpopo. In Mpumalanga we also have some two in the rural areas. In Mount Elif we also have an agro incubator. So we are even in Emalahleni we are even now going to be establishing a 4IR incubator in one of the old mining townships. So that this is a trend that we'll be following going forward. Then another question was the incubation partnership model with Gibela. With Gibela, we will be following a supplier development partnership model. So where they have committed, they said SIDA with the city of Ekuruleni said, okay, this is a building that is going to be utilized in this township. And SIDA will renovate the building, and then Gibela is going to be buying all the equipment that is necessary within that particular incubator. Plus, Gibela is an off-taker. So this incubator will be developing suppliers to enter into the supply chain of Gibela. So this is the partnership model for this. So Gibela, they funded about 20 million for the next 3 years in that. And then on the round tables with SOEs, the reason why we decided to have that round table with SOEs, we said, as you saw, we've got a target that says we must leverage funding with other partners in order to augment our own budget that is inadequate for the required support to SMEs. So we decided to have a round table so that we really make sure that the private sector understand what SIDA does, because sometimes it becomes a lot of duplication in the space, and sometimes private sector end up spending money to consultants who are taking them for a ride and actually pocket a lot of money, and only little support goes to SMEs. So we wanted to say this is the support that you can get from SIDA as private sector. These are the means of engagement. And also what we have done, we packaged a suite of support services for private sector company to say, even if you are private sector, you are playing in this place, it's fine. We are an ecosystem facilitator as SIDA. We've got support instruments that needs to be accessed by entrepreneurs. So you as private sector, you can partner with us on our technology transfer program. We can go 50-50. We can partner with us on our quality standard. You can partner with us on our export program. You can also partner with us on our incubation program. So those are the discussions that we were having with the private sector. Hence, we're seeing now much more of the private sector players that we have partnered with in the rollout of our incubation program. I think one other thing that I wanted to highlight regarding seed funds, I wanted to highlight that I think in this year, the 2020 financial year, there's been an introduction of Small Business Innovation Fund designed by the Department of Small Business, which is delivered through CIFA. And I think about four incubators are also fund management partners for that. I think two are here in the Western Cape, and there's other one is in KZN, and one is in the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Who's next?
Thanks, Chair. I think to quickly cover the EU funds, to say that out of the money is allocated, the CEDAS portion is about 15 million over the 2-year period.
15 million euros.
No, rent.
Okay.
Yes. And we have started using this money for this one template that we're working on. And people from the European Union are assisting us in terms of consulting. What the fund does is they give you technical expertise to assist you, and they utilize that money. And about 4 million out of that will be used for the digital hubs. And the bulk of the money goes to CIFA, which will be used for Planet Finance, which will be matched with the other funds that the CIFA is using.
How much goes to CIFA?
I think it's about 300
million.
300
million.
32
million. To CIDA is 15.
Uh-huh.
To CIFA?
32
million euro.
Euros.
In rent?
I don't know.
Could be 250.
Yeah.
It's about 250 million rand.
Yeah.
That goes to CIFA. Yes.
Chairperson, just one question that you get. Is it linked to the green fund of the European Union, insisting that everything must be green and that they would fund that kind of thing? Thank you.
No.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the underspending, the 45 million is about 3.8% of our budget. And in terms of what is it linked to performance, we said we are about 93% in terms of what we have achieved. And on page 6, we did indicate areas where we didn't achieve the number of clients supported through enterprise coaching, the value of support leveraged through partners. Now you can see that this is not related to that. Our partners also are faced with financial challenges, hence they could not meet the target that we have put. However, I must say, Chair, that what we did is at the end of the year, we did do a motivation to National Treasury through DSPD so that we can retain this fund. National Treasury also has pressures from other spheres of entities in terms of bailing them out, like ESCOM, like SAA. And out of our submission, they approved 95 million that we can utilize from unspent money. What they do is they look at your cash, and they use a certain formula to say that whether you've got extra cash or you've got less cash. Now from that formula, they approved 95 million, and that 45 million, basically what it does is it takes you to a deficit whereby you have got to utilize and spend money of prior year. For example, if you look at our balance sheet, you see that we have got about 45 million of accumulated funds since CIDA was established. And this is trying to tap into those accumulated funds by taking you into a deficit so that you utilize those funds. You can only do that through National Treasury's approval. And this amount, as I said, it was approved around September, October, and we've used this in terms of the commitment that we have highlighted there. We've used this money for that. And also we've used this money to fund the new priorities that are from the department or from the minister, the new priorities to fund that. And then hence we are funding these priorities out of that money, because these priorities were not budgeted for. And then these came as a plus for us, so that we can be able to fund those priorities. And in terms of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, that note 24 on page 154, and then that note 25 on page 154, these are the notes that I don't like when I prepare the annual report, Chair. And these are things that happen in the business. And I must say that, for example, if it's a fruitless expenditure, we take, there's a process that we follow. There's an investigation report that is prepared from the risk unit. And out of there, there are recommendations. And we take corrective actions to address those transgressions. And we take disciplinary processes. And I must say that we've implemented also, we've looked at our processes. We looked at the allegations of this procurement. And then we've put processes in place to prevent this from happening. And there's a new system that we've also introduced that helped us with the financial system, the quality past evolution system that we've introduced. It helped us to make sure that there's a proper segregation of duties to avoid these things from recurring. And where we've got to recover the money, we do recover. And we also, if there are criminal intents in there, we also reported it to the police. Police have been investigating some of these activities, and then we constantly follow up with the SAPS to get feedback from them. And in terms of the clients that travel, the trip to UK is different, the one of the clients. It's a different trip. And we are also looking at putting maybe measures like security to say that if you are taking clients overseas, and suddenly a person tells you that I've got a funeral, and so I'm not going to be able to go on that trip. We forfeit that money, and you try to recover the money from the client. The client says, I'm an SMME, I don't have money. And then we're looking at maybe having like security or a deposit, so that if a person has got, must be a pending issue that prevents you from going, from the trips that we have arranged to exhibit your group. And now, the trip to China, the SISMEC one, is a different service provider. These trips are different. It's a different service provider where the service provider took the goods to China. Now, when the goods arrived there, the service provider says, I was a clearance letter from one of the officials. Now here we've got three individuals that are pointing fingers to each other. The one from the department says, you know, the person from CIFA, from CEDA, the person from CEDA says, no, the person from the department. And then we did do an investigation report, and the fingers point heavily to the person that left, and hence the current looking at what corrective actions we can take when it doesn't belong. But I must say that from these incidents, we learn from them, and we put measures in place to prevent this from happening.
Another came here from Devon.
Can I take the next 2 weeks off?
To prevent this from happening. And
Yes, let me stop you on this one. Can you provide us with information, proper information with regard to this aspect, so that you don't just make examples about maybe the person was pulled but did not pitch up because suddenly there was a funeral. You're just making it, you are assuming, but we want to tell us exactly what happened so that we don't just say make a general example, but on all of them, exactly what happened. Maybe I should stop you there with regard to this issue of irregular and wasteful expenditure as well. I mean, the wasteful expenditure as well as the irregular. That's a specific, just give us the specific with regard to that as well. Another team?
I assure you I don't have coronavirus.
this is the
flame at the end of the flu.
Smoking.
I just want to do, yeah, that helps. Just for clarity, Chair, 32 million euros today translates into 575 million. And at the beginning of February on 16 grand euro was 512, so it's a bit concerning. Financial people say it was 350. Financial guys, get your calculators out, check your rate. It's a lot more money than you think of it. Thank you.
Can we also have a breakdown of that as to what it has been, how it has been spent as well, which projects it has been spent on? CEO, are there any other issues? Because you have been allocating your executive money. Is there anything before we ask the department also to say something? Like I was saying that, because that's the reason why I was stopping the CFO from continuing, because we said we want this information in writing, consequence management, including also the issue of how you can prevent this in future with regard to policies, And in your report also, the points that were raised by Honorable Lont, in terms of, I'll use the term blacklisting those people going forward, so that they're not also, he was using the term, recirculating, recycling, sorry. Yeah, recycling, you know, the same people benefiting now from another department or another entity. Yeah, so if you can also, in your written report, address those issues as well. Consequence management, what, how you're going to prevent that in terms of the policies, but also what happens to those people, whether in terms of blacklisting them, so that, yeah, as part of the punishment as well.
And the very last one that pushed to me by Chairperson saying there is still one, although you are saying one, I am saying one, is the one that was asking what does this slide mean for the sector.
But the question that was asked by Honorable Matebo. But I also went out, I don't know if I asked a question about the stakeholder satisfaction survey as well, if you can also address that. Yeah. If you have not addressed it while I was up to them.
The one on the sectors, this does not necessarily mean sector representation of companies per area. This says the pool of companies we have been assisting in this specific year. 2% of them have been in this sector. And again, here we are looking at only the 10,000 companies where we have a longer client, what we call a client chain, where we have to intervene on the same company for 6 months and longer. So it's not necessarily talking the total pool, because those are the companies that link to the centric survey. We go back to every 6 months and check what is happening now in your business. Are you satisfied with the services that you are providing? So that customer service survey report is based on the response that's given by companies that are under our care to say, am I satisfied with the service or not the service that I am receiving? So this is the percentage in the pool of companies. But we have been, I must say, we have been working our minds to say how best to illustrate this. For example, I say ICT, it says 0%. It's not like there are no companies at all. But for graphical illustration, when the number is too low against the proportion, now the graph, it shows as if insignificant, zero and below. Because I could say this sector in the incubation phase, this is one of the sectors that is very busy, that we can say we have a cluster of incubators that are in the ICT sector, like we have a cluster in creative industries, two or more, like we have in jewelry design and production. ICT, though, it's showing to be zero on the network, but it's one of the sectors that we are giving high attention to. And yeah, I've doubled up to cover the explanation in terms of the survey. How are these surveys coming from? What are we looking at?
Okay, perhaps with regard to the survey, can you also, part of the issues that we're going to follow up on them, send to us, can you also send us the survey form so that members can have a look at what are the areas that you cover? Because I'm also interested on the survey form when a person comes into these offices in the branches, whether they are satisfied as to how they are treated at that level first, before all the other levels of incubation and other services that you provide. The first point, when they come into the office, in your offices, in the branches, if it could cover those areas as well. All right. Chairperson, and then also I'll ask you to make your closing remarks as well before I allow the department to come in. Yeah.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to add on that survey to say that this was the service providers were called at one of our committees, board committees, and we have quite a number of academics, so we had wanted to know how they are sampling and all of that, and you know, we where we had found them wanting, we had given them more of what is it that we're actually requiring, exactly what you're highlighting, to say who did they actually question, because for us, I hear you talking about 34%, but for us, the 60% was actually quite a surprise, because we had expected an even worse rating. So that we will look at, and we will obviously bring the center that will report on changes that we have requested as a board. But Chairperson and honourable members, I just wanted to thank you for the questions that you have posed. I think for the recommendations also that you have given, and we will send the written report on the questions that we could not give full response on. So thank you very much, and we are looking forward to doing the presentation with you and CIFA in April. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. So I'll speak briefly on the issue that you alluded to, Chairperson, of job creation, our coordination thereof. So I know the Chairperson knows that there's the MTSF that government has published, and the department is part of the economic cluster, and we participate and contribute towards the realization of priority number 2 of 7, which is economic transformation and job creation. So as a department, we've been charged with the responsibility to ensure that at least 3 things happen at that level. The first is that the contribution of SMMEs increases from the current 35% to an impressive 50% by 2024. Secondly, that we ensure that there is inclusive growth, which includes the participation of SMMEs in townships and rural spaces owned by women, youth, and people with disabilities. And thirdly, that when all of these things happen, there should be job creation. So our conceptualization then of the programs that will respond to these very important targets has been that we need to have, for instance, CEDA and CIFA, as well as our good selves, operating in an environment where we ensure that the SMMEs and cooperatives that we support do create jobs. I'll make an example about CIFA. We have a program that we are implementing together called the Blended Finance Program. And in that program, one of the key qualifying criteria and performance indicators is that for an SMME to qualify, they must create a minimum of 10 jobs. And so this is then our intention to say, if we are to move the needle in the job creation space, we need to ensure that in supporting small micro enterprises, we also need to support those that are medium, and they will give us the job numbers that we need. And with CEDA, as the colleagues have been articulating, so we have been saying CEDA must put itself in a position where it becomes the ecosystem facilitator, so that the responsibility to ensure that there is proper business development support happening in the SMME space should not fall squarely on CEDA, and they must empower the ecosystem so that there are other people who will comply with their standards to ensure that BDS is provided to all who need it. And in this, we think that the ecosystem then will be filled with SMMEs and cooperatives who know how to manage their businesses, and they will be successful, competitive, sustainable, and grow. And when that happens, we will then see job creation happening in the space. In the case of CIFA, for instance, our executive authority has been as clear as water that CIFA must do everything possible to ensure that the support businesses that will give us at least 1 million jobs, which will be our contribution towards the 11 million by 2030. So CIFA has then to think about what should be their strategy towards the achievement of that very huge target. And it seems then that there is agreement that as much as we are supporting micro businesses and informal ones so that they formalize and also grow, we need to focus on the small and medium. And as a department ourselves, we have said, yes, we are happy to provide some support. The SISA administration has said we need to do away with grants and we need to start implementing the blended finance model so that we ease the issue of access to finance for SMMEs. And we think that once that is in place and the finance to SMMEs is cheap, we will see more SMMEs participating in the space. And with stable SMMEs participating, we are confident that job creation will happen. And where we have also made a very serious commitment, Chairperson and Honorable Members, is the reimagining industrial strategy that has been adopted by Cabinet and joins all of us to support the 7 national priority sectors. And the strategy says in those 7 sectors, if you look carefully, you will see that in each and every one of them, if you do a proper value chain analysis, in there will be serious opportunities for SMME participation. And we have made it our business to make sure that we will put ourselves in that space and make sure that we support SMMEs so that they participate. Because the reimagined industrial strategy says that a lot of opportunities will be made available with the reorganization and reconfiguring of those 7 industrial sectors that hold a serious potential for the participation of SMMEs. Secondly, on the issue of localization, members will know that there are the 23 designated products by the DTI in 2011, if my memory serves me well. And so we have said as well and presented this to Cabinet that we want to adopt the same approach that we are talking about under the 7 national priority sectors, to say there are these 23 designated products and there are serious opportunities for SMMEs to participate. So what is our responsibility there? And we have said with CIFA, CIDA and the CITAS, we need to provide technical training to SMMEs in their respective spaces so that they can find themselves participating in there, because government has made a call that those 23 are designated, and if SMMEs are available, the opportunities are there. You link that with the 30% as public procurement program as captured in the triple PSA regulations of January 2017. If you put those together, you will then realize that there are massive market access opportunities for SMMEs. But where we need to focus and concentrate as a department, as the small business development portfolio, is to ensure that we have a proper pipeline of SMMEs who are good and ready to take up the opportunities that are made available by first the localization and secondly the 30% public procurement program. And lastly, Chairperson, there are these 1,000 designated products now that the President has pronounced. And as a department, of course, as with the localization and the industrial strategy and 7 priority sectors, we as a department working with our entities will then make it our business to make sure that our SMMEs have the potential and the possibility to participate. Because the market has been blown wide open, and we now have a responsibility to ensure that we have qualifying SMMEs partaking in that space. So when all of these things, Chairperson and Honorable Members, are put together, we are very confident that SMMEs will participate in the mainstream economy. We will be able to break down the existing monopolies in the different industries and sectors of our economy. And then the numbers that we will get from SMMEs will take us close to the massive 11 million jobs that must be created. Lastly, if I can talk on the township and rural economies. So here, Chairperson, we participate in the COCTA-driven DDM, District Development Model. And in here, we have been organized so that efforts are made deliberately to address the pain points in various districts of our communities. And as a department, we have put our right foot forward to say we have an assortment of programs in the department that we can use to address some of the issues that have been broached in the different districts that we have been participating. Yesterday, we participated, for instance, in a meeting talking about preparations for the OR Tambo district. Today, there's another meeting. Colleagues are there to see how we can bring our programs to the fore so that we are able to assist SMMEs on the ground. In the next financial year, to ensure that we revitalize townships and rural economies, there are funds that have been set aside that will drive our efforts towards township entrepreneurship development. And around this, we are saying we want to ensure that we resuscitate township economies, and we think that the best way possible is for us to support, one, the sectors and industries that are already there existing, try to see how we can scale them up, but importantly, we don't want to see lopsided growth in townships and rural areas. So where we see that a rural area or a township is dominant on one sector or industry, it is our approach and attitude that we need to also develop the sectors and industries that are less developed so that you can have a diverse economic activity happening, so that we don't have just one industry being saturated in one area. And this, we think, will give us good numbers going forward and ensure that this spirit of entrepreneurship that we so want to be ignited in our townships and rural areas is indeed encouraged and supported by this department and government at large. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the information. Let me take this opportunity to thank honorable members for attendance and participation. As I was indicating earlier, that we'll meet with the department and its entities again on the 22nd of April. The reason also for doing that, I want to highlight this also for the attention of the department and the entity. We raised this with the minister when she came here with the CIPA, that the NCOP has adopted an approach that would give more time to the committees to conduct oversight, to such an extent that there was going to be a reduction with regard to plenaries, so that even afternoons can be utilized for committees to conduct their oversight. But also the reason we're having these joint meetings with the NA on the APPs and the annual report is to give us an opportunity to also now focus on other areas of work. Because on the APPs, it's a whole combination of information, and therefore it is mostly at a high level. But once we're done with the APPs, we can invite a CIDA just maybe on incubation program, so that you go to town with regard to that specific program. So that it's not a link with all the other programs of the entity. So that is our aim, the reason why, because sometimes we get bogged down on these annual APPs for this and that, but you know, without necessarily going deeper into the actual work that you're doing in the ending. So in future we might just invite you to come and report on any of the program without combining all of them. You know, we'll do the same with the department. The issues that you raise, even with the other departments, for example, we might invite DTI to come and present to the committee, because also we oversight DTI as this committee. We might invite them to come, just tell us about this reimagined industrial strategy that has been adopted by the cabinet. Instead of inviting them to come and present the APP, and then imagine the industrial strategy is just a paragraph in that APP. But now they will have to come just on that, not on APP, just on the reimagined industrial strategy, so that they go to town about these seven priority sectors you're referring to. Yeah. So that is going to be our approach going forward. So I just wanted to highlight that. Chairperson, I hope that you, when we invite you also for the APPs in on the 22nd of April, you make sure that the report will take into account the kind of questions that have been asked by members, because it won't be different. The line of questioning will also be focusing on those issues. And the point that I was making earlier, that we should not try and make our report to be flowery. We must also raise the issues that are challenges, things that are not going well. These issues of wasteful and fruitless expenditure, members are very interested in those. The irregular expenditure, report on those as well, don't hide them. Because we're not only relying on the PowerPoint presentation, we also read the actual books, that is the report of the AG as well. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming and also for briefing us and what you've been doing in the 2018-2019 period. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you. All right.